The road to Weathertop is more than just a path through the lonely wilderness. It's a journey deeper into history, doubt, and fear. Today we explore how the Hobbit's growing sense of isolation mirrors Strider's own quiet uncertainty as a leader, and why even the name Mordor carries more power than they realize, as we continue our exploration of J.R.R. Tolkien's Fellowship of the Ring in Book 1, Chapter 11, A Knife in the Dark. I'm Aaron, your host and guide to wandering Middle-earth, especially for first-time readers of Tolkien's works. Visit ringspodcast.com to find my free downloadable guides for reading The Silmarillion and other works by J.R.R. Tolkien. Now, let's wander.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
We pick up in the narrative today with Frodo after he and Strider had been watching the flashes of light on the hills far away. 5 days out from Bree, Strider points out their next major milestone. At the end of a line of hills, a tall hill stands out. Strider calls it Weathertop. This hill is such a commanding landmark that Strider says that the Black Riders and Gandalf are all likely converging on that point. As he is describing the advantages of the hill, we see a continuation of two themes we've encountered before. The Hobbit's sense of overwhelm at the vastness of Middle-earth, and Strider second-guessing himself when making decisions. Let's take a look at the sense of overwhelm. Strider mentions that some sharp-eyed beasts on Weathertop might be able to see where they stand now. The hobbits look around, to the hills in the sky, and Sam says, quote, "You do make me feel very uncomfortable and lonesome, Strider." This moment is a great example of Tolkien's ability to evoke a growing sense of isolation. Strider's warning about sharp-eyed beasts subtly shifts the hobbit's perception of their surroundings. What once seemed like a barren, windswept hill now feels exposed and threatening. The very landscape, the hills and the sky, transforms into a source of paranoia, an ever-watching presence that looms over them. Sam's reaction, feeling very uncomfortable and lonesome, is pretty relatable. It captures the psychological effect of realizing the danger is not just ahead, but all around. The hobbits have stepped beyond their comfort zone, and their understanding of the world is changing. The Shire was safe, familiar, but here, they are small figures in a vast and indifferent wilderness, where even unseen enemies might be watching. This creeping sense of being hunted contributes to the overwhelming fear that will culminate in the terrifying events of this chapter. And in another way, this idea of unseen agents of the enemy being able to observe them is a bit of a teaser to how Sauron is usually portrayed, the great all-seeing eye that observes the deeds of its adversaries, but never reflects on its own actions. We'll see this idea pop up again, but for now, the idea of beasts and beasts spying on the hobbits is just a start. The next theme we see here is Strider's uncertainty in his choices as a leader. Quote, "I think," answered Strider slowly, as if he was not quite sure. Strider's hesitation in this moment, his slow and uncertain response, reveals a crucial layer to his overall story arc. Up to this point, the hobbits have relied on him as their guide and protector, but here we glimpse his own doubts. Unlike Gandalf, who often speaks with firm authority, Strider is still navigating his role as a leader. His uncertainty makes the situation feel even more precarious, as if they are all walking a razor's edge between safety and disaster, because they actually really are. This moment reminds us that even the strongest figures in the story are not immune to fear and doubt. Leadership is not about having all the answers, but about making the best choices despite the uncertainty. And this trepidation that Strider shows gives credence to how Strider/Aragorn is portrayed in the Peter Jackson films. Many fans like to point out that book Aragorn has no hesitation about his role as future king, and that's certainly true. But what these advocates often forget is how often Aragorn is still uncertain about his own choices. And that will come up later on in The Lord of the Rings, particularly around the breaking of the Fellowship. And yes, I will admit that the films took this one aspect and blew it up as a key characteristic of Aragorn, but it is at least not without some precedent. And lest we forget that The Lord of the Rings is a sequel to The Hobbit, and that Frodo's journey in some ways reflects Bilbo's, we have a few reminders here in this part of the chapter. At one point, the hobbits are observing a sunset. They are alone in the wilderness, far from anything they have ever known. And just like Bilbo used to think about his old armchair and warm hearth, quote, the hobbits thought of the soft light of sunset glancing through the cheerful windows of Bag End far away. Another amusing motif I found in The Hobbit was that the reader can almost tell the time by the meals that Frodo is missing and thinking about. And we see a similar comment here where the hobbits are getting used to, quote, much walking on short commons. So much so that Pippin gives Frodo a bit of a backhanded compliment about how much weight he's lost, to which Frodo replies in part, quote, I hope the thinning process will not go on indefinitely, or I shall become a wraith. Whoa, Frodo, slow down there. Don't you know what chapter you're in right now? This statement, said as a joke, is actually quite a serious foreshadowing. In just a few short days, Frodo will come face to face with wraiths, and he will barely escape that encounter, only to find himself actually turning into a wraith. All this leads to the first of three scornful warnings from Strider. Quote, do not speak of such things, said Strider quickly, and with surprising earnestness. Yes, it was an unfortunate joke, but Strider, who knows many dark things, as we explored a few chapters back, Strider knows the danger of the Black Riders. He knows their history and their capabilities. I can only imagine, if the ignorant and naive hobbits are feeling overwhelmed at the wide world and the short supplies, how does Strider feel? Responsible for four hobbits, one carrying the One Ring, Gandalf is missing. Black Riders on the trail, spies all around. If I were Strider, I would be feeling quite stressed out, to say the least. No wonder he never seems to sleep while on this stretch of the journey. As real as the stress and overwhelm is, the hobbits and Strider still find time to share a few stories. It begins as the hobbits start to realize their surroundings are not entirely natural. They see walls and dikes. Dikes, which I would add, are very similar to the boundaries they observed all the way back in the Bardo Downs after Tom Bombadil had saved them from the White. At that time, Tom had remarked that the dikes were boundaries of old kingdoms. And here too, in the wilderness, the hobbits observe that some hills have, quote, ruins of old works of stone. This is a good time to remind you of a little line from The Hobbit, when Bilbo and the dwarves passed through this same area. From the chapter Roast Mutton, quote, now they had gone on far into the lone lands, where there were no people left, no inns, and the roads grew steadily worse. Not far ahead were dreary hills rising higher and higher, dark with trees. On some of them were old castles with an evil look, as if they had been built by wicked people. I love this little parallel between the two books. When Tolkien wrote The Hobbit, in his mind he had not yet connected that story to his broader Middle-earth legendarium that he had been drafting for decades. But even then, Bilbo and the dwarves lived in a world with a rich and ancient past, one where kingdoms had arisen and fallen in the same lands they now traveled through. Now, in The Fellowship of the Ring, Tolkien is able to take this idea further and connect these lands and stories to their historical significance. Merry picks up on the connections, asking about the paths and the ruins, which remind him of the Bardo Downs. He asks if there is a Bardo on Weathertop. I'm not sure if he actually expected to get an answer. Up to this point, Strider has been mostly a wilderness guide. The hobbits have yet to dig into his character and story. At any rate, he answers Merry's question, which the hobbits then all gaze in wonder at him. He answers, saying that the paths were made for traveling between the forts along the hills that were a defense against Angmar. Quote, in the first days of the North Kingdom, they built a great watchtower on Weathertop. Amansul, they called it. It is told that Elendil stood there, watching for the coming of Gil-galad out of the west in the days of the Last Alliance. Okay, let's pause because there's a lot to unpack there. Let's start with the North Kingdom. This is the ancient kingdom of Arnor, founded by Elendil, after the drowning of the island of Numenor. After the death of Elendil's son Isildur, the kingdom broke into three warring factions. One of these factions allied with Angmar, a land of evil at the north of the Misty Mountains. If you would like to wander farther on those stories, then you can find links to previous Lord of the Rings episodes, which I have conveniently listed for you on the chapter guide for this chapter. Find that at ringspodcast.com/attack. Using that guide will make it really easy for you to find all the episodes that go deeper into those stories. So visit ringspodcast.com/attack and get your download today. And the Last Alliance, what is that? If you've seen the Peter Jackson films, then you have seen the Last Alliance. In the film's prologue, a joint army of elves and men fought against Sauron, eventually becoming victorious and allowing Isildur to take the One Ring. The elves were led by their king Gil-galad, and the men by their king Elendil. Both Gil-galad and Elendil are portrayed in Amazon Prime's Rings of Power series. But the hobbits want to know more. They want to know who Gil-galad was. Too bad they couldn't go to ringspodcast.com/attack and download my free chapter guide that explores this further. But they are treated to more lore. Except this time, the lore master is not Strider. It's someone else who, up to this point, has been consistently underestimated. But we'll get to that right after this break.
This weekend, only at Macy's, it's our lowest prices of spring. How low? Diamond rings, pendants, and earrings, only $399, originally $1,500. Ninja blenders, now $89.99. And $395 men's designer suits, only $99.99. So if you're wondering why you should shop Macy's lowest prices sale, well, the name pretty much says it all. It's our lowest prices for one weekend only. Starts tomorrow at Macy's. Savings off already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
Lord Vader, Operation Andor is underway.
Excellent. If we release 3 episodes per week, the Lorehounds will never be able to cover every episode. The Imperial forces will crush the rebellion before it begins.
Stand by. We're picking up something on our scanners.
Echo Squadron, reporting in.
Delta Squadron, on your left.
Django Squadron, on your 6.
With Imperial forces coming in fast, we're calling all Rebels to join the fight this season. Starting after the April 22nd premiere, you'll hear 3 full breakdowns for each week's episodes of Andor Season 2. Each podcast will be led by one of our squadron leaders, Alicia, David, and John. We'll be bringing in new and familiar voices to fill out the roster. Search for the Lorehounds on any podcast platform to join us in a galaxy far, far away. And don't forget to check out our season pass for even more content like our Holocron bonus pods. It's good news for anyone, except Darth Vader.
Mary asks, quote, who was Gil-galad? But Strider is lost in thought and doesn't answer. But, quote, suddenly a low voice murmured and began a song about Gil-galad. Let's explore the song for a moment. Yes, I know sometimes you skip the songs and you may really want to know who the singer is this time, but the songs give you the lore, and this is Lore of the Rings after all. So, in the first verse, we learn that Gil-galad is, quote, an elven king, the last whose realm was fair and free. Gil-galad is the last king because he is royalty in the House of the Noldor. The Noldor are the faction of elves that returned to Middle-earth, and in fact, most of the high elves that we meet in Middle-earth are Noldor, including Elrond and Galadriel. But why aren't either of them royalty? Well, the parentage of Gil-galad can get tricky, because Tolkien wrote conflicting family trees in different places. But suffice to say, however you slice it, the monarchy for the Noldor passed through the line to Gil-galad, who was the last. He had no heir, and after his death in Mordor, no other Noldor took up the mantle. Hence, Elrond and Galadriel do not actually call themselves a king or queen in their own lands, but rather Lord and Lady. And this song also tells of Gil-galad's death. He rode away to war and, quote, into darkness fell his star in Mordor, where the shadows are. The song as given here is rather poetic, but we will see in a few chapters that Elrond was actually near at hand when Gil-galad fell, and we'll recount the story in greater detail. But let me just share part of what Elrond says, quote, I beheld the last combat on the slopes of Orodruin, where Gil-galad died and Elendil fell. All of this is to say that the Last Alliance was a final counterattack to the growing threat of Sauron. Both Elendil and Gil-galad fell in the final battle, and while it was victorious, the battle was hard won. Well, to the surprise of all, it is revealed that Samwise Gamgee has been singing the song, one that he learned from Bilbo, though he says that there is more to the song, but it's about Mordor, which he didn't want to learn. Pippin repeats the name, quote, going to Mordor, which draws out a second scathing warning from Strider, quote, do not speak that name so loudly. Strider knows the danger they are in. Black riders sent from Mordor hunt them in the wild, seeking to find the ruling ring for the Lord of Mordor. To flippantly say the name of that land out loud is unwise. His sharp reaction underscores not only the immediate danger, but also the weight of the very name Mordor. In Tolkien's world, names carry power, and to speak them carelessly is to invite their presence. The hobbits, still naive to the full scale of the threat they face, treat the name with an almost casual detachment. But for Strider, who has spent years battling the servants of Sauron, Mordor is no abstract concept. It is a living, looming shadow. His warning is not just about being overheard by enemies, but about the gravity of the path they are on. By saying Mordor so loudly, the hobbits unknowingly make their journey feel more real, more inevitable, as if the dark land itself is listening. Oh, Pippin, you fool of a Took! In only a few short months, you yourself will stand outside the black gates of Mordor, facing down the final armies of Sauron, in an effort to distract his gaze from finding the Ringbearer. Perhaps then, you won't be so casual with the name of that dark place. Thank you to this episode's executive producer, The Old One. If you would like to support the Lore of the Rings podcast, visit ringspodcast.com/member. If you found today's Wandering of Middle-earth to be inspiring, please share this episode with a friend. Lastly, if you would like to connect with me, I am most active on Threads. Find a link to my profile at ringspodcast.com and tap the at symbol near the top. And thank you for wandering Middle-earth with me today.
This weekend only at Macy's, it's our lowest prices of spring. How low? Diamond rings, pendants, and earrings, only $399, originally $1,500. Ninja blenders, now $89.99. And $395 men's designer suits, only $99.99. So if you're wondering why you should shop Macy's lowest prices sale, well, the name pretty much says it all. It's our lowest prices for one weekend only. Starts tomorrow at Macy's. Savings off already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.